Welcome to the Divergent Paths. I am your host, Dan Dunford, and thank you for listening. As always, thank you for listening. Back in New York after basically a week-long vacation upstate in the Adirondacks, around Lake Placid. You know, if you've never been up there, summer, winter, otherwise, you should definitely go because it's awesome. But that was the reasoning for no video last week, if you noticed. But I will be back pumping out videos this week in addition to the podcast. Wednesday, I think I'm deciding on Wednesday being the day for videos. So on Wednesday, I will have a video featuring Whitney George, who was on the podcast 2 weeks ago now. So look out for that. So the pod this week, my guest is, guests are, I'm not sure. Anyway, I had Alexis Smith and Mary Bowden of Seraph Brass, Seraph Brass is a brass quintet, made up of a number of wonderful women. They have a, you know, it's a brass quintet, but they have a, well, we talk about it. There's a way they do it. They have a pool, a roster, rather. Man, words are so hard. They have a roster of women, that make up Seraph Brass, and they are quite excellent. And, they're about to embark on their 2016-2017 season coming up here in September. So, I was really happy to get to talk to Alexis and Mary. Mary is one of the founding members of the quintet, and Alexis, you know, came on before last season, and they were fun to talk to. They called in via Skype from South Florida, and so that, you know, the sound quality will be a little bit different. I don't want to say worse necessarily, but it's a little different than usual. But I think everything worked out fine. I'm still kind of figuring some stuff out with Skype. Like, I can't necessarily talk while the other person is talking, while the guest is talking, which you'd think would be self-evident and just, you know, polite. But I'm used to kind of bumping in here and there and having my guests bump in when I'm talking. And you can't really do that over Skype because it only likes to accept one voice on the recording at a time. So, but I think everything turns out just fine. That's just a little bit of a learning curve for me as I work with this stuff on Skype. But anyway, enough about that. There are two short pieces featured on the episode today, performed by Seraph. First, in between the intro and the interview, is Holborn's The Choice, arranged by Jeff Luke. You know, this is spelled C-H-O-I-S-E, so I'm like really wondering if I'm pronouncing it right, because I've never heard it actually said out loud. I've only seen it. But we're going to go with The Choice. and at the end is Chuck Sipes' arrangement of Debussy's Clair de Lune, also obviously performed by Seraph Brass. And I hope you enjoy our interview, and be on the lookout for the Reverse Oracle YouTube video with Seraph that'll be coming out in a few weeks. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the interview, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Head over to the Facebook page and click like Divergent Paths Pod. Also, consider, if you have a few dollars here or there, consider heading over to patreon.com/divergentpathspod to, pledge maybe $1 a month to, the work that I do, cause there's a lot of it, and, you know, I like talking to people and I would like to keep doing it. Anyway, enjoy your week. Thank you.
Well, how's it going?
Great. It's very good.
Good. You guys, this is first off, thanks for doing this. This is a little bit new for me still. This is only the second time I've used Skype to record one of these, so still kind of tweaking things a little bit. But overall, it seems to be working okay. You guys are in the middle of your yearly rehearsal cycle for the upcoming season, right?
Yes, we just finished 8 days. Well, today's our last day, and we're all leaving.
Sad about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe more at the end of it, not so much in the middle of it. And you guys are like, so you guys sequester yourselves off in the middle of nowhere where you can't be reached.
Pretty much, actually. We don't even have service out here. We have Wi-Fi. That's it.
That's about it. Well, what else do you need, really? Come on. First off, I'm joined by Alexis Smith and Mary Bowden of Seraph Brass. For those people, I mean, I will have already covered this in the intro, but, you know, why not just go through it again? So, this is... Mary, you are one of the founders of the ensemble, right?
Yes.
And Alexis, you're coming up on what, second or third season?
Second season? Mm-hmm. Yeah, second season.
So we were both in New York at the same time, but I don't think we never ran into each other, so it's just kind of
No, it's so weird. It seems like such a small world in New York, but then there's so many people that I meet afterwards, and I'm like, oh, I've heard about you, but
well, it's more of a you went to Juilliard and I didn't kind of a deal. Well, no, that's nothing against, you know, why would we have run across each other kind of a thing, you know? It's just, I don't run into Juilliard people that much. So, we might as well just, like, start off with, you know, what's the deal with the name? I mean, if you're from a, kind of like a, had like a biblical upbringing, like I did, like, Seraph is not a particularly uncommon word, but, you know... It's not necessarily the first thing you think of when you think of, like, a brass quintet.
Well, when we started the group, we brought in maybe, like, 100 different names and kept narrowing the list down. And for me, it's, you know, not so much about the meaning of the word, but I love the way it sounds. Mm-hmm. And the meaning works a little bit, but I think it's a great name, a great brand name. And, it was interesting to me. I actually played a piece called Seraph this past year, which is a coincidence, by James McMillan, and I was listening to an interview that he gave about the piece because I wanted to know more about it. And his reason was as simple as mine. I love the way the name sounds.
It's a solid name. I mean, what are you going to do? I think I first came across the ensemble last fall, sometime right around the time I was, like, in the first couple months of my podcast, and I was like, oh, what? That's a very similar, you know, reasoning. Oh, that's a cool name. Oh, these people, this is a brass quintet. Oh, this is, you know. And now, that's really good grammar. What was the kind of the origin story, like, as far as, you know, if we're writing a comic book, you know, why not talk about how it came together? I mean, how many years is it now that you guys have been functioning as a professional brass quintet?
This is our, we started in the fall of 2014, and that was the formation year, and this past season was our first working season.
Gotcha.
So we'll come up on our third season, but it'll really be our full second working season. And we came up with this idea. My co-founder, Katie Ambrose, who's not with us this week, we had this idea in graduate school about 10 years ago. And we kept talking about it, but, you know, when you graduate school, you're trying to find yourself and you're trying to find your life. And we just weren't in a place professionally to start an ensemble. Mm-hmm. And then in 2013, we both emailed each other at the same time. It was a coincidence. We were both like, we're ready now to start this group. and we were just in the right place in our lives, and so we just went for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm obviously kind of filtering, doing my background research, and you kind of filter through bios, and mostly like it's a lot of I don't know if I don't want to say what you would expect. It's a lot of what you would expect, but a lot of players who hold principal jobs and have good orchestra work, and generally if you have an orchestra job, like if you're in a brass quintet, it's a brass quintet made up of members of that orchestra, right? Or it's part of a school that you teach at. So, why pull together people from that? It's not necessarily convenient for, no. You guys are kind of spread across the east, east of the Mississippi, right? Why try, make a concerted effort to go in a different direction than what might be easier?
I think actually it's really a wonderful thing because it allows us to pursue our individual projects. Mary is a fantastic soloist. Katie plays out in LA. I'm based here, so we're able to pursue our own interests, but at the same time, we can carve out these chunks of time where we really get to intensely workshop our programs, and we get along really well with each other, and we're all great players. We all work very, very well in rehearsals. We work well with how our sounds mesh, and I think finding people like that is really special. And when you can find a group that has that working atmosphere, then you do whatever it takes to make that happen. We're all committed, we're all dedicated. So, if we spend time in West Palm Beach or if we go to Chicago, It's fun.
Yeah, it's you're not hamstrung by only pulling. I mean, not that that would necessarily be hamstrung. There's great players everywhere, but like you're not stuck with one specific pool of players. Like for in my own experience, like if I'm here, and Alexis, I'm sure a lot of the same people that I do. If you're here, like there's what people that you can use. and while that's generally you're going to be able to get good musicians, it's it's still limiting in a lot of ways.
How about since I have the two of you here, how about your guys' individual backgrounds and why you're drawn to why you're drawn to this type of chamber music? It's a very specific type of musical sensibility. Mary, you just mentioned that this is something you wanted to do, and we're kind of like, well, now I can do it. But would you always want to have your own quintet kind of a thing, or was it something that came later after you were like, there's something missing in what I'm doing right now?
For me, I started building a solo career in my late 20s, which is a bit later than people who decide to be soloists. And I've been building on that. And I love chamber music, and I love starting projects. It has become a passion of mine. I have a nonprofit chamber ensemble in Naples called Chrysalis Chamber Players, and we've been around for 5 years. And so I do that, and then I always wanted this brass quintet because it's another avenue for chamber music, for collaboration, for doing your own arrangements and commissioning works. It's just another creative venue, and I love the collaboration with other musicians. I love solo playing too, but I think I like the collaboration with four other soloists making great music.
Sorry. And Alexis, you're much you're at a much earlier stage in your career. But you're at an earlier stage in your career. I mean, you haven't been out of school all that long.
No.
So how does this fit for you? Like, how does this fit into how you how your career functions now?
Actually, it's a very interesting story. I am actually the managing director for a fast food chain, so that's how I mostly spend my weeks.
Can you say which one, or is that?
Yeah, so it's a chain based out of West Palm Beach called John Smith Subs, and we're now franchising nationwide. So I spend my days doing that, and I sort of stopped playing trombone because I was working so much. But then I got a call from Mary, and it just seemed so exciting, and you could tell how passionate she was, and she had these great long-term goals, and I wanted to be part of that. And then I got the chance to play with everyone, and that really solidified that I was like, this is really special. I can't let this go. And so it's wonderful that now I have things to practice to. I get to play with amazing musicians. And we played a concert last night, and it was wonderful to have everyone come up to us and be like, oh my gosh, I remember these pieces. And it was so wonderful to hear everyone. And I feel very, very fortunate to have Seraph in my life.
Well, so just to kind of to expand on you personally, you know, I except for within Seraph Brass, I haven't heard you play, but I know, you know, I know people who've heard you play, and everything they have said has been very complimentary.
Who are you talking to?
Not important. I have my ways. Like, I'm well connected. What do you want from me? no, but you know, you hear about people's playing, and you know, no matter where you are, like in your city, you hear about people. God, I feel like I have to like qualify everything I say now. but you know, if I can ask without like trying to like dig in too much, like you have. You know, some good, some very good honors on your resume. Like, why were you not playing trombone until Seraph called you up? Like, what were you burnt out? Were you, you know, before like a more wholesome thing came along, or what led you to this situation?
It was mostly, I was always very interested in things outside of trombone as well.
Gotcha.
And I got a call about this opportunity down here, and it was too good. It was too good to pass up. And so I was still playing, but really my focus was toward work and the office. And then yeah, things came together in a really wonderful, wonderful way. And I've been lucky in that my bosses are very supportive. Like, they actually came out last night to hear us. And they're all music lovers, so it's wonderful that I can have this sort of double life.
And in a lot of ways, I would imagine that, like, you know, it's helpful to have, in any group, to have someone who is knowledgeable, who, you know, because a lot of times musicians, we are forced into a position to have to do everything for ourselves, for our brands, so to speak. And it's nice to have someone around who understands more of that and like better. Anyway, I just like run into this with like having to try and like organize my own life, and it's just having to do everything myself things that, you know, I don't understand necessarily. It's a pain in the butt. Anyway, cool. Well, other than, you know, if someone were to like happen across your website, it's not just five of you,
right?
Like that are listed as mm-hmm. part of this ensemble. So how does this kind of work? Obviously, well, I mean, it allows you to do larger scale things, but you know, most of what I've seen is just mostly the like a core five. But there's what, 12, like somewhere but around 10 or 12 people listed as members.
Right. There's 10 this coming season. We have around 40 shows next mm-hmm. year. So there's a lot of work. And we draw from a roster of players that I handpicked, Katie and I handpicked, and it works out really well. We weren't quite sure because it's a new model, but it's been really great because people come in and everyone's learning the same show,
and it's, I call it my Seraph family. You know, we're texting the other women who aren't here this week, and everyone's inspired from each other. And when you get a new person in, it's, you know, we're all getting to know each other. And, you know, most of the people on the roster at this point have had some history with the group. We have a couple of new people coming in because my co-owner is on maternity leave for the next half a year. And so having this flexible roster enables people to, you know, if you need maternity leave or if you have a trip, it enables someone else who has history with the group to come play. And it's just really nice to keep that. And hopefully at some point, I really want us to do a big brass concert with everybody. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, and with the exception of a few, you know, things where it's usually like orchestra brass sections collaborating, there's not that much happening with brass choir unless you're in school or in an orchestra that does that, which is a bummer. So was that, I mean, was this model like your idea? I mean, was this what you wanted to do from the beginning, or was this something that kind of developed as it became clear that you needed to have more than five people? You know, because everyone has their things. Everyone has their things that they're doing in addition to the ensemble.
It did develop that way pretty quickly because we realized that people needed that flexibility. And I want the best players, and the best players are very busy.
Yeah.
And we can't, we're not a full-time group yet because we're a baby group. We're coming in our third year, and 40 concerts is great for a start. I'm really thrilled. But I know that I can't ask the players that I want to commit to everything when it's not a full-time job. But, you know, so I think we'll keep this roster thing for a long time because it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, personally, knowing that there's a rotating roster, that sort of sealed the deal for me to say, yes, I would love to commit to Seraph, because if I can't get time off of work or something happens, you know, I'm not locked in, and it's actually really wonderful. And so now I can play Seraph. And
so we have another trombonist, Donna Parks, who's principal of Louisville, and she's fantastic. And so now both women know the shows, and both are great to work with, and it just helps both of them out to be involved in the group.
Well, I mean, even what people consider to be like the linchpin of touring brass quintets, they're not full-time. Like, Canadian brass isn't full-time anymore. So, like, who's really full-time? Is that, like, something you want to do eventually? Like, to really be some in a position where you, like, are, you know, 40 concerts this year. That's a lot for any young group, no matter what. You know, that's it's really impressive for any group that's less than 5 years old. But, like, are you looking to expand even further than a 40, you know, dealing, you know, than a 40 concert season?
I'm pretty open to whatever is available. So I think things will happen organically. I have a vision in my mind of what I would like. I mean, I don't know if I'd want it to be completely full time, because I enjoy I love the solo projects, and I do play a couple of part-time orchestra jobs as well. And so, but I think my ideal model would be Boston Brass. Like, they're really healthy. They go away for their few day a week residencies, and they're able to go home and teach or do their other jobs as well. But they're, you know, I love traveling so much that I would love to do that. I'm very nomadic.
Well, and I guess the last thing about, as far as like the makeup of the group, I mean, yeah. I was listening to an interview conducted by a fantastic sports journalist and host named Katie Nolan, and the person she was interviewing was teasing her and asking about women in sports media, and she's been asked about it so many times that she was just basically like, fuck you, like in a joking sort of way, like, they, you know, these two people were friends, but she's like, fuck you, stop asking me about being a woman in sports media, right? That being said, you know, when you have especially within the brass community, when you're running an ensemble that's made up of all women, that
there are questions and that come with that. Mm-hmm. and, you know, and conceptions that come with that. Was this something that you had in mind from the beginning? I'm assuming it was. But just why that was, and
I have a good answer for you.
I'm sure because you, this is a question I'm sure you have to answer a lot. So I'm assuming you have a really good answer, and I'd love to hear it. I really would.
Well, you know, when I was 17, 18, I came across the International Women's Brass Conference, and I didn't know what it was, and I went, and that was the first time that I saw all female ensembles performing. They have Monarch Brass, which is a bigger brass ensemble. And it was really inspiring, you know, and it's, that conference is open to both men and women, and it was, mm-hmm, this great community and this really great energy. And I also studied with a female trumpeter when I was a teenager. It was a very strong female presence in my life, and it really gave me the confidence to move forward in my career and feel confident as a woman brass player. And so when Katie and I first came up with the idea, we thought it would be really inspiring to show women brass players on a stage who are confident, making great music. And I think that would just be inspiring to both men and women and young students just to see that. So it's not such an uncommon thing.
Yeah, I mean,
do you have anything you
want to say? That makes sense. I mean, okay, so that's your mission starting it, right? So Alexis, when you were, you know, when they called you, you know, how is that? You know, you have, you're approaching it as someone who is being asked to join it, not as someone who's creating the mission statement necessarily. So what, you know, how does that work for how you think about it?
Well, I was so excited. because I've always personally thought about it. I've been like, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, there was this all women brass quintet group, but, you know, I never did anything about it, but then I get this call, and I was just thrilled. I was, yeah, I'm at a loss for words, because I was just genuinely all around excited about it, about the opportunity, and also just being there for young girls to see, because there really isn't that. I started playing trombone, I think, when I was 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And I had fantastic mentors. I was very, very lucky. But at the same time, you know, there is this sort of vacuum for high-profile women brass players. And I think it's important. I think it's inspiring.
I mean, I know how often I am playing next to other female trombone players. You don't have to tell me. I mean, it's pretty rare. But so, I mean, what... If you had to put it into a paragraph, a audible paragraph, that doesn't make any sense. But what do you consider like the mission statement of your group? I suppose
we draw from a roster of America's top female brass players, and mm-hmm, we love to make great music, and that's
all you need.
Statement, and you know, we build around that, just making great music. You know, we have an arranger for the group who makes original arrangements for us, and we're also commissioning a work by a woman composer. So we do both the popular side and we do serious music. I feel like there's no limit because we're so new. I don't want to put limits on it. I want things to happen organically, and I think that's a healthy way for the group to be.
Yeah, and it's definitely fun that you know, you can play Go by Anthony DiLorenzo, and then the next piece you play might be like America from West Side Story. Mm. And so you're able to present works that will really make the audience happy, and it's fun to play. And then you're also able to be like, hey, there's this other cool thing that you might be interested in too. I know when we played in Virginia, some of the people who attended the concert, they were like, we loved that piece, Go. And I don't think they would have been exposed to that if they weren't at the concert. And I think also playing popular music and then juxtaposing that with something that's catchy but slightly off the beaten path, I think you're also able to give access to a lot more people who never would have been like, I wouldn't, they never would have picked it up in a store. They wouldn't have come across it anywhere. But now you have this great platform to share music.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard a piece by De Lorenzo. It was like on a Burning River Brass CD when I like some my band director gave it to me in high school, and I was like, "What is this?" And yeah, it's like, you know, a composer like that, you know, providing an entry, because your lay listener is not gonna go on Spotify and search Anthony De Lorenzo. Like, what the fuck? Why would they do that? unless someone is bringing it to them. So that does that does bring me into the question of like, there's a lot of brass quintets. I mean, like so many,
right.
Like all of them, like there's dozens in every city. and what, I don't know, 80% of them play all the same music. Roughly, you know, a lot of times it's just a way to make a few extra dollars at doing wedding gigs or whatever, you know, whatever kind of thing. But you know what, how do I, I'm trying to think of how to like, phrase this, but you know, what sets what you do apart, you know, from, you know, when you're a young group in a pool that is so big. You know, and that's, you know, that's no fault of anyone. You know, it's just it's a popular setup. What are you gonna do? But like, how do you feel what you do sets you apart from just like the ocean that surrounds you, to speak?
First and foremost, you know, I try not to, you know, make comparisons, but be inspired by other groups that we really enjoy. My personal favorite is Boston Brass.
Mm-hmm.
They've been great mentors. And for Sarah, if I want us to have our own voice, and that's when I found it was really important for us to have our own arrangements made that play on the strengths of the players. That's really important, and that's how I think we'll create our own voice, is having these arrangements. And also, you know, commissioning new works that also fit with the group sound, and also creating new works for the brass quintet repertoire is really important to me as well. So we've had one commission so far, which was an interesting piece, because it was for solo, it was for soprano and brass quintet, that a friend of mine, Joseph Hallman from Philadelphia, did. And it's a really beautiful piece. And so I think just building on that and following my role models and their footsteps while creating our own voice, I think is really important, because some arrangements don't work for us because they were tailored for another group. And so, you know, we work on our strengths. You know, I love to play the Queen of the Night aria in the original key, and our arranger, Jeff Luke, has been arranging for us. He was one of the members of Atlantic Brass Quintet, so I've been working with him to make arrangements for us, and it's been a lot of fun to just tailor our strengths. You know, hey, the trombone loves to play this kind of music, or I love to play high piccolo trumpet, and we really work on that, and it's.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's like a, I don't know, to my brain, obviously, that's like really just smart. I mean, obviously, you know, pieces that have been written for American Brass Quintet, or obviously the very, very profitable industry that is the Canadian Brass Arrangement Library. I mean, those are all great, and of course, like, if you grow up and hear that, you're like, oh, well, I want to play that same thing because it's cool, or because, I don't know, some of them I don't like as much, but you know, it just makes sense to have someone there to, and I don't, you know, there's not that many who will do that, you know, especially, well, at least among younger ones, like, it's just easier to use what's already there, but it seems to me that it would be just much more valuable to have someone there to do it for you. Like, why? That's just, you know, me talking through the voices in my head. So, I mean, you guys are prepping for this season. You have 40 concerts throughout the season. I mean, that's the one thing about doing this on Skype is I can have the internet open, and that works really well. It's great. It's so great. I can't do that
when I'm taping at people's at different places. But I mean, you're starting the Midwest and bouncing around there, doing some Adele, because why not? but you know, what do you, when you're preparing for a season like you are? I mean, is there you're doing this basically the same kind of the same show throughout the whole thing?
There's one concert that presenter that a booking agent that called Allied Concert Services.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a company where a lot of the bigger groups got their start, like Boston and Canadian and Dallas have all done these tours. And what happens is you're put on the roster if the owner likes your group, and the company then books the tours for you. So we have 4 weeks with Allied, and they request that we do 2-hour shows. So it was really important for us to train this week, because that's a long show. That's you have to pace yourself, and the programming has to be in the right order for everybody, and you have to be able to communicate with the audience and talk with them and engage. And so that's what this week was for, to really workshop this 2-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last week is we just do the normal concert length of an hour 20, hour 30 that was booked through our manager that we have. And so we'll do a couple concerts in New York State and the residency at Penn State Erie. So we, you know, it just depends on what the presenter asks. But when you're asked to do a 2-hour concert, it's really important to run that show a lot before you actually go on stage to
right.
build up endurance. You know.
Of course. I mean, it's just common sense, you know, because you have to be able to get through it. So when you're putting together this show for the year, whether we're talking about the 2-hour version or the slightly truncated version, what are you looking at? Like, is there an overarching theme, or you know, is it more just kind of eclectic? You know, trying to bring in people. I mean, we touched on this a little bit, but like, just when you were when you guys were kind of like sequestered. Putting together what you thought would be a good show. Like, what were kind of the things you were drawing on, like thematically and musically?
Well, Allied specifically asked for a popular program, so there can't be anything that's quote unquote strange, which is fine. You know, that's great. So I would say up until January, we're more in that direction of doing just mostly our arrangements.
Well, okay.
But then later on in the season, when we're not on that touring company, we're going to do some of the commissions and have more of a mixed repertoire. But so, for this 2-hour show, it's 2 hours pretty much, you know, classical pop stroke.
Yeah. Okay.
The thing that I love about our show that we're doing on tour is that everybody has a feature. So for audiences, they're able to really see the capabilities of each instrument. Like, I'm playing Nessun Dorma, Mary's playing Queen of the Night. We're all showcasing these really beautiful things about our instrument. And I think people will be able to, relate more. We talk a little bit about what it's like to play a brass instrument on a 2-hour show. We talk about switching between all the different trumpets and things that audiences might not normally pick up. So it's fun to be able to teach a little bit and be like, oh, by the way, there are all these like really cool things.
Why are there 10 trumpets on the stage?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's really fun, because I'm a little bit nerdy, but
fun. Let's be real. There's 10 trumpets on stage because it's a well-known fact that trumpet players just like their toys.
I even heard 2 different piccolos on tour, because one is not enough.
Wait, is one rotary valves?
Yes.
I hadn't actually seen a rotary piccolo until recently. I was doing a parade with some dude brought a rotary piccolo to a parade.
Amazing.
I found out later that dude just only plays rotary trumpets. But it was just really weird. I was just like, we're in the middle of like fucking somewhere in upstate New York, and we're marching along playing pep band music, and you're playing a
Rotor, okay, whatever. Trauma players, I don't get it. I think it's weird enough that I have to play more than one trauma, and it's stupid. I just want to play one. Just one. But people are like, "You, we want to hire you to do this." I'm like, I can't. No. Well, whatever. Poor me. Oh, man, I had a really great question locked and loaded, and now I just, you know, this is what happens when you talk about yourself. You forget everything else. just bear with me for 1 second, and I'll cut all this out because it makes me look bad. Damn it. Oh, yeah, I was going to talk about... well, first off, I mean, I kind of want to ask you about like which program is your favorite, but like I feel like you don't want to talk about that because it sounds, you know.
We have favorite pieces for sure.
Okay.
We love this arrangement of the Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 that was actually, you know, for Atlantic Brass Quintet, and Jeff Luke was nagging me. He's like, I really want you guys to play it. I want some more groups to play it.
It's so much fun.
It's really fun.
Probably
our favorite.
you guys just put up a video of that, right?
We did.
Yeah, I was looking at that yesterday, and yeah, well, it sounds really good. Also, a funny thing happened because one of the trumpet players is Katie Miller, right?
Yes.
Well, there's also another trumpet player in New York, a freelancer who does some Broadway, who also named Katie Miller. And I was like, wait, I didn't know she was... Oh, it's not her. you said popular. All right. You're doing these popular, quote-unquote popular shows because that's what was requested. Fantastic. What does that mean? I mean, you're hitting opera. You're, like, doing popular opera. Like, when you say popular, are they talking like pop music as well, or are they just like popular classical?
Well, the first half is more, I guess, you know, light classical, and, you know, I'm sneaking in some pieces that I really enjoy, like the Albanese piano pieces, Granada, and some of those I really enjoy. So I put those in there because I think they're audience friendly, and I love the style personally. And, you know, Queen of the Night is one of my solo features that I play with piano, so... Mm-hmm. To do that, and so I was handpicking works that I personally really enjoy, which I know is selfish, but I'm also in mind the audience, and so
of course
it's important to, you know, put in some things that people are going to really know and feel nostalgic about. And so the second half is a little bit more, you know, we do the West Side Story and Porgy and Bess, which we all love. We love those Jackie O arrangements, classic.
I didn't realize he would like. I didn't realize Jackie O was like still alive and kicking around New York until recently. And I was like, oh, he just like is hanging out, just being old. that sounds really horrible that you just assume someone has passed on because like their most popular things were all from the 70s. But there you go. He's still kicking around. Anyway, that's kind of morbid now that I think about it. So when you're in a live concert situation, again, whether it's long form, shorter version, like how are you interacting with the audience? I have very strong opinions and pet peeves about ensembles who don't really interact with their audiences, you know, and that's obviously, I keep, you know, bringing up, you know, Canadian brass, but they're kind of the gold standard of this model, so to speak, not just because they use gold-plated instruments, but you know, like, the interacting with the audience, and, you know, what they did was more of a show, like, not so much interaction, but just like, hey, we're silly, but, you know, really just, like, conversing in a way that, you know, you're like, I'm bringing this to you, and I really enjoy this. How do you... When you're in the middle of a concert, like, I'm assuming you have things choreographed in a way, but, you know, what do you guys do to, like, really try and connect with, you know, these people in, well, here we go, Sheldon, Iowa, or, you know, that kind of a thing?
Well, I see it as having a conversation with the audience, and also one of my pet peeves is only giving the birth date and death date of the composer, so... We all try to tell a personal story about our lives, and maybe about the pieces as well, but we really try to get the audience to know us a little bit better personally and as a group. And, you know, we're not going to try to be funny, but we just try to be ourselves. And that seems to be the best plan. You know, don't read off papers, just have a conversation. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're just having a conversation with the audience and, you know, telling them about what we do and what our life is like.
Well, I think also if you genuinely are excited and love what you're doing, that comes across to the audience and it's infectious. So there's, for example, I play this aria called Nessun Dorma.
Is that a famous aria? I don't think I've ever heard of it.
It's like this little known thing. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be surprised if you've heard of it. But growing up, my dad would always play that in the house. And so that, personally, that aria really means a lot to me. And so I get to tell that to the audience. And I think when they know these little tidbits about the pieces and why it means so much to you, it hits them in a different way. So maybe, yeah, they did come out to see a brass quintet show, but now they're coming out to see a brass quintet show that they really can be a part of. And I think that's very, very important.
Who knew? Like, connecting with people is important. People like to feel included? What? What is happening?
Audience and being like, hey, let's talk about this piece that I really love and I'm excited to share with you.
Mm-hmm. You also see, you know, when we rehearse and have rehearsal videos, we're kind of sitting in that box formation mainly because of the lack of space. But when we perform, we prefer to be fanned out, Boston Brass style. So you're not closing yourself off from the audience, but you're, you know, more of sharing. And so once we have a bigger stage, we can do that. And that feels much more engaging to me. So you're not completely in our own little box, you know, we're playing to the audience.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So all right, let's talk more about like the business aspect. Cause that's, it's 2016. Like music is a business and we have to do it ourselves mostly now. I mean, even if you have a booking, someone to book you or stuff like that, like a lot of this stuff is handled by individual musicians. Like me, I do everything myself, but it's great and exhausting and I don't sleep ever. But, but for you guys, like, you know, because you have a very, you know, you have a specific, you have a specific look, you have a specific mission. How are you, whether from the beginning, like how are you kind of looking at promoting yourselves and how has that changed over the past three or so years?
I think the image and the branding came together in a way that I was really happy with this past fall. When I worked with my my web designer who does all my websites, and he designed the logo for us. And I think in having the color, which happens to be my favorite color and my mom's favorite color, which is kind of hilarious. I'm wearing a Serif Brass t-shirt right now. you know, I think the branding is really important for the image of the group. And so I worked on that a lot with my designer, and you know, having everyone look a certain way is important too. Mostly smile, you know, look engaging, and like we look like people who will teach your children, you know what I mean? and just having like a really, like, you know, I think our group is bright and charismatic, and that's what I try to show on the website when I'm working with the designer. It's not just about putting up your events or putting, you know, I spend hours thinking about this stuff. I'm a little bit obsessive when it comes to that. I drive my husband a little bit crazy. but it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it, oddly enough.
Well, once you get past like the whole, man, this is a drag, trying to do all this stuff, you know, and I don't know, it's a hard thing to balance. Let's just put it that way. Excuse me. So, in addition to the touring and the, you know, first off, the season runs from what, September through like next May, kind of a deal, or
whenever we book things.
Whenever you're just done.
In addition to this, are you like actively working on getting recorded business out there for people?
We're producing a live CD from this past season that we will sell on tour. It'll be about 50 minutes of music, but it's a live CD.
Mm-hmm.
So we can share something on the tour. But we're making plans, hopefully for late next summer, to record a real CD.
Mm-hmm. So what? Why? You know, why produce a live album instead of waiting for the studio?
Because we had a lot of concerts this our first year, and we brought out an engineer friend of mine, and it wasn't that expensive, and so we just budgeted for that, and why not?
Why?
We knew going on this Allied tour, you know, we're going to be playing sold out shows, 500 people. I've done this tour before with another group, so I know what it's like, and people are going to want to buy CDs. And so it would be really disappointing if we didn't have something to share. And we weren't quite ready to record a real CD this summer because I wanted to workshop the concert.
Mm-hmm. It's a little, obviously you're talking in plans for like next summer. Well, it's not like forever away. I mean, that's a lot. You've got a lot coming up before then, right? So, I mean, but when you think of a guy who used to write for Spin magazine, he always says this thing, and it applies to albums and it applies to like television shows. But for musicians, like, you have your entire life to record that first album. And mm-hmm. everything that goes into that, et cetera, et cetera. There's no rush. I mean, you know, in your case, maybe there is a little bit of, I mean, not a rush, but you want to have something, of course. But when you think about recording like a debut album, you know, a year prior to actually doing it, you know, what kind of things do you think about like producing as your calling card? You know, I realize it's kind of worth talking a little bit in theoreticals at the moment, but I'm just, you know, interested in what it looks like now.
For now, I think we're thinking about our own original arrangements by Jeff Luke.
Really sharing those. The strengths of the group.
And we're commissioning new works. We're in the process of that, the early stages of that. We don't have a recording date set yet, so that may be pushed back, because we were thinking June, but now we have exciting news that we will be the featured ensemble at the International Women's Brass Conference. So we'll be doing that for a week.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to probably push the recording to later in the summer and the fall. But again, it's no rush because you want to do everything the highest standard. You want to do everything correctly and get the engineer that you want. And it's just, there's a lot of steps that can't be rushed that I learned with my first album. You know, I did everything the way that I wanted to do it, and I was happy with the result. I did not, you know, nothing was substandard. I didn't rush anything, and that's a good way to operate.
Yeah, you only run into having to, like, the clock only starts ticking after you release the first album, and then it's, you know, and then there's, you know, you don't have all the time in the world. You know, not to be depressing or anything, man. So, your first, just going to stumble around over here. That's cool. Your first concert as of the season is about midway through September.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got until then? I mean, Adele doesn't count. Adele is Adele. I have friends who here in the city who have done her shows in like the Radio City. I think what she did Radio City last year, some friends who were on that, and I'm just like, man, I want to play with Adele, but I'm not like, you know, and this is not anything like, I'm not like I am jealous, but not like angry about it. I just want to play with Adele because she's dope. but like, what are you guys kind of kicking around doing until you take off and are off to the races?
We have our individual.
Yeah, I think because we had a show last night where we just kind of workshopped what would work, what doesn't work, because you know things that you're confident will work. Sometimes they don't work in reality, but then sometimes things that you're like, oh, this will be super easy. I don't have to worry about this. But then that's the thing that all of a sudden on stage, you're like, oh, or at least personally.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, well, hold on. Let's talk about that. Like that there is a gap between what you, like you just said, there's a gap between what you think will work and what will end up working. So, right. I mean, we're what, 12 hours? 18 hours since you guys played, which is cool. And this is your first time running through everything?
Yes.
So what, I don't want to beg you to like talk about things like that, things that maybe failed, but I just am curious as to like, what things happened last night that you either thought would go better than they did, or things that you were like, oh, meh, whatever, that ended up going really great.
I think it's sometimes even as basic as being like, what about the lighting in the venue? What type of lighting are we going to have? Like, it's these little details that you don't think about until you're like, oh, I should have done this.
It was a little dark.
It was pretty dark.
I didn't know the show that well. I found myself punching down a little bit, trying to read the music. And
my stand kept dipping. And so it's like those small details that you start to really think about. But then I also think what's really interesting is talking with the audience in the intermissions and afterwards and getting their feedback and what they're excited about and what they pick up on. So yesterday was so valuable in all of these ways of seeing what worked and what didn't work. And the small details that fall through the cracks that we now are aware of.
Now for the tour, we're going to be in my dad's van for 4 weeks for the first part of it, and I will buy stand lights and I will have some extra stands in the car, which I was not planning on doing before. But now I'm like, okay, yes, our contract says that each venue must have adequate lighting, but that doesn't guarantee it. It doesn't guarantee a stand will work. You know what I mean? So I'm like, let's just prepare for the worst and let's just come prepared because I need to see my music. My eyes are not great if it's not.
And adequate lighting means different things to different people. What are you guys looking forward to for the next season? I mean, nothing.
Well, I personally, I grew up in a family where my dad every summer had 2 weeks off. He doesn't like to fly, so we've always had a van in the family van, and we would drive across the country for 2 weeks. And so I've been to a lot of these strange places. I've been to North Dakota. I've driven through all these places. And so for me, it's going to feel really nostalgic. And my dad's letting us borrow the van, so we're taking the Bowden-mobile on the road.
I want to paint flames on the side of the van.
So for me, it's going to be really nostalgic to be just doing what I did as a kid and seeing the world that I really enjoyed and then doing it with a group that we formed, and it just feels really special. It's just like, both parts of my life kind of coming together. Yeah. What about you, Alexis? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to all of it. I'm looking forward to sleeping in.
She is amazing. You know what she's done this week? The rest of us, so we're at her parents' house in West Palm Beach. She works, she gets up at 6:30, works all day. Pretty much every day. She would work all day, come home at 4:30, we would feed her, and then let's go. Are you ready to play? Let's play, let's play. And we would rehearse during the day and kind of sit by the pool and talk. Such a hard life. She would come home and rehearse and sound amazing, go to bed, and she did the same. She worked all day yesterday before our show, and pretty amazing. I don't know if I can do that.
There's large coffee. We should get a Starbucks sponsorship.
Yes.
I'd like a Starbucks sponsorship. Jesus.
No, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how the group grows together because we work so well together, and like I'm constantly amazed by how great rehearsals are because there aren't any egos. It's like, oh, I think I messed this up. Can we do this for me? Or hey, what if we did something? It's such a healthy atmosphere. And I think that is also one of the things that allows us to be able to be across the country and then come together and have such efficient rehearsals. And so seeing how we grow after playing, what is it, 27 to meet shows?
It's 26 in the fall.
26 shows. And seeing like the first show versus the last show, I'm really, really excited to see always how we grow as a group.
And we'll do another rehearsal time in September with the other trumpeter. We have two trumpets rotating for the fall tour. We also have Rachel Rodriguez is coming in. And so Rachel Rodriguez and Katie Miller will split the fall tour. And the other trumpeter, Amy McCabe, is in the Marine Band, and she'll be on her own tour with the Marine Band. So she'll also be touring, but away.
Good old Marine Band. I have a trumpet player buddy of mine who's the librarian for them. It's so much work. I feel good. I feel good about this. Yeah? Awesome. Thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.